from pins 1 and 2 of U575, and the source of signal is made by the B trigger source switch. Now, right off pins 1 and 2 inside of the IC are two 50-ohm resistors tapped in the center, so we have a 50-ohm source impedance, and the line has a 50-ohm characteristic impedance. Now, let's turn back to schematic 8, and you'll see that the line is terminated in 50 ohms here, using R1003 and the emitter resistance of Q1013, and then, of course, a similar network on the other side. Now, that plus line going over to the base of Q1013 is just dead-ended. There's no signal coupling between there and Q1016. The only reason for Q1013 is to provide a balanced load on that B-trigger circuit. The signal, therefore, that we're going to use is the minus signal. It has a value of 0.5 mils per division. Now, that current flows right through Q1016, flows through grounded base amplifier Q1021 to appear across that 950-ohm load. Well, that comes out pretty darn close to 0.5 volts per division. Now, that same current through 50 ohms is the 25 millivolts per division that we quoted earlier. Notice the DC centering adjustment, which assures us that with no signal arriving here, that the signal out voltage is at 0 volts. Now, since this signal out is a front panel jack and subject to some operator slapping a large voltage on it sometimes, we need to protect our circuits. Okay, in the positive excursion, CR1022 would disconnect to protect Q1021. In the negative direction, CR1024 conducts at a minus 15 volts. Now, if a large negative voltage was applied to the signal out jack and had a low source impedance, it could quite likely burn out R1026 if CR1024 didn't pop earlier. There's no current limiting in that lead. All right, let's take the sawtooth out jack next. The inputs off to the left are the A sweep, comes in at J1030. Now, that comes from the interface pin 3A, where it comes from the plug-in. It's a 5-volt negative going ramp from 0 volts down to minus 5. It then passes through a 2.49K resistor. Now, that's on the interface schematic. You might want to sketch that in the margin. Then passes through R1033 in through the selector switch into the emitter of grounded base amplifier Q1042. Now, R1033 terminates that 50-ohm line that comes from the interface board. It also serves another purpose. You see, we're looking into the emitter of Q1042, a very low impedance point, and if in troubleshooting one wished to look for a signal at J1030, of course you wouldn't see one, were it not for R1033. So there's a little voltage drop across that resistor, enough so that you can measure with a voltage probe at J1030. Now, that same voltage would be there, you see, even though the switch was in the B position. Now, the other input selected by that switch is from the B sweep generator. It comes from pin 3B, and again through a 2.49K resistor. So in either case, a current drive into the emitter of Q1042 at grounded base amplifier. CR1042 raises the base of that transistor one junction so that the emitter will be at precisely 0 volts. R1040 is the emitter tail for that transistor. Q1046 and Q1052 form an operational amplifier. The configuration within the loop is a cascode stage. R1049 is RF, and RI is, Well, one of those 47 ohm resistors in series with the 2.49K that we drew out in the margin. So the gain is about 2. Well, that accounts for the 10 volt output. The source impedance then would be R1057 in series with the output impedance from the operational amplifier. CR1044 protects the base emitter junction of Q1046 in case somebody pulls Q1042 out of the socket when the instrument is hot. You see, otherwise the base of that transistor would head towards 50 volts, and the emitter is tied to plus 15, so it would pop that junction. Now, when we have a 1 meg load on the sawtooth out jack, the signal is taken across R1054, of course, in parallel with the feedback resistor. When we apply 50 ohms, then we have an attenuator composed of this source impedance and the 50 ohm external resistance to provide the 0.5 volts of ramp. Now, there are 3 inputs to the gate circuit. The first one, which says A gate from J60, well, that comes from the interface diagram and from the A plug-in, pin 1A. It's a positive going 5-volt gate. And in series with J60 is a 1.3K resistor. You may want to draw that in. So the signal at the base of Q1069 is about 750 millivolts. Now the next input, the B gate, comes from 1A on the B time base to another 1.3K resistor. Notice the switch, which selects either A or B ramp, and then in the delayed position grounds the base of Q1069. Now, the delayed gate is negative going. It's also 5 volts in amplitude. It comes from pin B9 on the interface through another 1.3K resistor. It's attenuated in a similar manner and goes to the base of Q1073. There we have polarity reversal. Notice the positive feedback from the collector of Q1069 through C1070 to the base of Q1073, helping to shape up the leading edge of the ramp. Now the output is taken from the collector of Q1073 off to the right into the emitter of grounded base amplifier Q1084. Now with 750 millivolts, we're going to switch the current between Q1069 and Q1073. If you look at R1071, its emitter would set at about a minus 600 millivolts. So we have 14.4 volts or so across that resistor. So we have 14.4 mils then of current, which will be switched from one side to another. Now let's take the condition when Q1073 is on. Well, we have 14.4 mils flowing through R1073, providing about a 4.3 volt drop. Okay, that gets us down to, 10.7 volts then, right? All right, let's pass off to the right then to the base of Q1084. The divider and temperature compensating diode CR1081 sets that base at 11.5 volts. So that transistor is off and its collector is down, pulled down through R1087, and that's the negative excursion of the gate at 0 volts with Q1084 turned off. Well, let's take it in the other direction when Q1073 is off. Now the emitter of Q1084 sets at, about 12 volts. We have a 3-volt drop across R1073. Well, that's 10 mils. The 10 mils then flows through Q1084 and to the right there through R1087, and that's the 10-volt gate output. Now, if we terminate the plus gate in 50 ohms, then the output would be 0.5 volts as a result of that 10 mils. Now let's go back to the collector of Q1073. You'll notice that there's a takeoff there that goes through R1079 and down at the bottom of the page. Well, that goes to the readout circuit and is used in the gating mode of the knob readout. Now the B gate, before it gets to the switch, kind of off to the left there, goes in through transistor Q1118, where it will be used with the calibrator. Now that transistor inverts the signal so that it's negative going as it passes through a section of the calibrator switch over into pin 2, the trigger input of U1125. Now Q1116, temperature compensates Q1118 and also sets the base of Q1118 at precisely 0 volts. Now U1125 is a Fairchild 923 JK flip-flop. It toggles on a negative step, providing the J and K inputs are low. It's then a divide-by-2 device. Well, let's look at the other input. That's way off to the left there, where Q1103 and Q1111 forms a 2 kilohertz Bose oscillator. Now, that oscillator is becoming quite popular in tech instruments as a calibration standard. It takes up very little space, it's not very costly, and it can be quite accurate. We're calling for a 0.25% frequency spec on this instrument. They accomplish that by matching the temperature coefficients of C1108 and R1102, R1101. Now, we've described the operation of that oscillator in several tapes lately, so we'll pass on it now and merely say that the output is a clean square wave of 2 kilohertz in frequency, whose duty cycle is quite accurate, and the frequency is quite accurate. Its output couples through C1114 to the trigger input of U1125. The signal at the collector of Q1111 is about 4 volts peak to peak. The negative excursion at the right of C1114 is clamped just below ground by CR1119. The 7-in equivalent of R1120 and R1119 is the collector load resistor for Q1118. All right, whether it's the 2 megahertz output from the oscillator or the B gate, it comes in at pin 2 of U1125. Now let's look at the switch down below. Now in the off position, you'll notice that the collector of Q1118 goes to ground so that the B gate doesn't interfere with us. Then switch 2 grounds the K input of the flip-flop, which forces pin 7, the 1 output, high. That high is inverted in Q1128. There's no inversion through Q1131. No inversion through the common emitter amplifier, and the Cal out volts jack is at 0 volts in the off position. Now the next position is the 1 kilohertz. Now pin 3, the K input is grounded, so that's low. Pin 1, the J input is grounded, so that means that the flip-flop will toggle. The collector of Q1118 is grounded, so the plus gate doesn't bother. And on top of that, the collector is disconnected by the next section of the switch, and then section 4 of the switch over there shows a connection, so the oscillator is connected into pin 2 of U1125, and it'll toggle with every negative excursion. We get a 2-to-1 countdown version out of pin 7 and becomes a 1 kilohertz calibrator signal. Now let's take the next position down there, B gate divide by 2. The J and K inputs are grounded. We removed the ground from the collector of Q1118 and connected that transistor up to pin 2 of the flip-flop. At the same time, switch number 4, you notice, opens, disconnecting the oscillator. All right, the B gate signal in at pin 2 will be a negative going gate, so the leading edge will toggle the flip-flop. So the output there at pin 7 and over at the Cal volts out jack is a divide by 2 version of the B gate. Now the next position is DC. In that position, we short out the B gate again. We put a low in at the J input of the JK flip-flop. The K input then is pulled high, which forces pin 7 low. That low is inverted in Q1128, becomes a high, and following through the path like we did a moment ago, places a high at the Cal volts jack. Right, Q1128 is just a collector-loaded stage. CR1129 makes that thing a current switch. The constant current flowing through R1129 then is switched either through the transistor or through the diode with the output from the flip-flop there at pin 7. Now, the collector of Q1128 could have been tied directly into the base of Q1135, but that would be too much drop across the transistor, so we just placed another one in series with it, Q1131. It just limits the drop across the two transistors. Now, I mentioned a moment ago that Q1128 and Q1129 was a current switch. Well, the swing there at pin 7 of U1125 is a little over a volt, about 1.2 volts or so. So we switch 1 mil of current through R1129, either through CR1129 or Q1128. When it's flowing through Q1128, that current flows through the parallel combination of R1132 and R1138 to turn on Q1135 and turn off Q1137. And the other excursion there, where that current flows through CR1129 and Q1135 is turned off, Q1137 turns on, and that forms the output calibrator signal. Now, Q1135 and Q1137 will switch alternately with whatever drive they have from the flip-flop. When Q1137 is off, its collector is at ground, and that's the zero excursion of the Cal volts jack. Now, when Q1137 is on, then the current that will flow through the attenuator resistors flows through R1136, and the amount of current depends on the base level at Q1137, and that's set by the voltage setting emitter follower Q1140. And as you can see, the Cal adjustment is tied to the base of that transistor. We'll look at the calibrator switch down below. Let's take it in the 40 volt position. The collector load for Q1137 to ground is, well, R1150 in series with about 450 ohms, or about 4.5K. Now, the calibrator adjust will have set the base of Q1140 at about 42 volts. We're down a junction through that transistor, up a junction to the emitter of Q1137, so there's 8 volts drop across R1136. Well, that comes out to just 8.9 mils, and 8.9 mils through 4.5K comes out to the 40 volts that we need at the Cal out jack. Now, that would be true either in the DC position or during the time that the square wave is being generated. In the various other voltage positions, we just attenuate that 40 volts to provide the 4 volts, the 0.4 volts, 40 millivolts, and 4 millivolts. Now, when the current loop is connected, then we have about 4.1 K to ground from the collector Q1137. It would be essentially R1150 in series with R1152. Now, we don't care what the voltage is at the collector Q1137. The CalVolts jack is disconnected at that time anyhow. So the 8.9 mils is split. The 8 mils flows through R1152 through the current loop, and the rest of it flows through the attenuator resistors. Now, that 8 mils flows through 5 turns in the current loop. The 8 mils times the 5 turns looks like 40 mils to the current probe. The converter and rectifiers is pull out schematic 9. Now, in the upper center of the diagram, with transistors Q1234, Q1241, and associated circuitry, is the oscillator that will be used in this inverter. It operates nominally at about 26 kilohertz, although it can range from as low as 22 kilohertz up to about 28 kilohertz with varying line voltages. To the right of transformer T1310 are the full-wave rectifiers, supplying what we will term the pre-regulated voltages. Now, all of these, with the exception of the 5-volt and the 130 volts, will be regulated further on the low-voltage regulator schematic 10. First, at the top, there's plus 7 volts, which, when regulated, becomes the 5-volt supply. The next one down is 5 volts, which is used for the lamps. 130 volts, which is used in the low-voltage regulator circuit and also in the horizontal amplifier. Next one, 54 volts, which regulated becomes plus 50. Plus 17 becomes plus 15. Minus 17, minus 15 when it regulated. And the minus 54 becomes the minus 50-volt supply. The lower center of the diagram is U1275, the inverter control, which controls the entire inverter. Let's begin with the power plug, the lower left-hand margin. There we go through a line filter. F1201, that 15-amp fuse, is in case one of those capacitors shorts to ground inside of the filter. Then there's the main line fuse, 4-amp. Then a thermal cutout, which opens at 88 degrees C and closes at 71.7 degrees C. And both sides of the line's broken by the power-on switch. Then there's a filter composed of R1205, C1205, and C1206 that gets rid of some of the silicon spikes. Now, then the line selector switch, shown in the 115-volt position, use the two right diodes in that bridge as a voltage doubler. Then, with a switch in the other position for 230 volts, we use the entire bridge. So the output in either case will run all the way from about 220 volts to 360 volts, depending on the line voltage. Now, DS1208 and DS1213 are protective devices. They're rated at 230 volts, peak-to-peak, plus or minus 15%, and the purpose is to protect against either a line surge or plugging the thing into a higher line voltage, because that would be pretty much the same thing, wouldn't it? All right, anyway, when they exceed that voltage, they essentially short and blow the fuse, thereby protecting the rest of the circuits. Now, both of these protective devices are in series when the switch is in the 230-volt position, and only DS1208 is used in the 115-volt position. Now, in series with the filters is thermistor R1309, which limits the current during the initial charge time of the input filters. Now, the filters are C1216 and C1217. Notice that they're in series. Now, they're rated at about 200 volts, so it's important that they both charge at about the same time. And kind of off to the left, there are R1213 and R1219. 1208, equalize the load across both of those capacitors so that they do charge at approximately the same time. In series with R1208 is a primary of a transformer T1208, which supplies the line trigger, and also down below into the inverter IC as a line sense input. Now, when we lose power, or turn the power off for that matter, then the filter capacitors retain the charge for a period of time. But we want to turn the inverter off immediately, so that's the purpose of that line sense input to the inverter control. Now, the two capacitors bleed through R1221, and that takes a period of time. Now, that means that there's a shock hazard there even after you turn the power switch off. So C1219, DS1219, and R1219 form a relaxation oscillator that'll keep that thing blinking until the voltage gets down to about 70 volts. Just as a warning to keep your fingers out of there. Now, the time constant of the filters and R1221 is matched to the thermal time constant of R1209, the thermistor, such that by the time the capacitors are fully discharged, the thermistor will have reached its cold value and ready to provide protection the next time we turn the instrument on. There's a 2-amp fuse to protect the DC circuits. T1225 just rejects common mode currents from the oscillator. R1225 damps that circuit. Now, the common mode currents that can't get through that transformer get shunted to reference ground through C1227 and C1228. L1229 and C1229 form a filter to keep the inverter current spikes from going back into the filters. The spikes themselves get dissipated in C1229, and only the sinusoidal currents flow back into the filters. All right, that brings us to the oscillator. Now, this is a free-running oscillator operating, as I said, at about 25 kilohertz. We're going to interrupt it or slow it down to provide regulation, and we need a start circuit to get it going in the first place. But once it's operating, it's regenerative. It'll continue to oscillate. First, look at Q1234 and Q1241. They are the oscillator transistors. Notice that they're in series right across the line. Now, the collector of Q1234 is tied to the plus output from the rectifiers. And as I said earlier, that'll vary with line voltage, but let's just call that 330 volts. That's the nominal value. The emitter of Q1241 is tied to what we'll consider DC reference. It's the minus side of this inverter. Now, as I pointed out earlier, these transistors are in series. The collector of Q1241 is tied to the emitter of Q1234. Now, if Q1234 was on and saturated and Q1241 was off, then the emitter of Q1234 would be pulled up to 330 volts. Now, if Q1241 was on and saturated and Q1234 was off, then the collector of Q1241 and the emitter of Q1234 would be down at zero reference. So test point 1234 will be a square wave swinging between 330 volts and 0 volts. Now, right across the output from this oscillator is a series resonant circuit composed of L1237 and C1237. Now, that's resonant at 28.9 kilohertz. In series with that is the primary of transformer T1310. Now, also in series with that is transformer T1235. And then one turn of T1230. I guess we can call that the primary of that transformer. The secondaries are the four-turn windings, which drive the bases of Q1234 and Q1241.